Welcome to the Natural Health 365 Talk Hour. I'm your host, Jonathan Landsman. As a quick reminder, Natural Health 365 Talk Hour show recordings, special events, and discounts are available exclusively for Inner Circle monthly subscribers. Simply click the banner on this page and subscribe now. Our show today, Curing Cancer, an Integrative Approach. Our guest has been in clinical practice for over 35 years. He is certified in family practice, osteopathic manipulation, and in Nevada, certified in alternative medicine. Specializing in cancer and other chronic diseases, our guest is referred to as an integrative cancer doctor, currently licensed to practice medicine in California, Idaho, and Nevada, with a focus in the field of biological medicine, which combines classical treatments with modern science and therapies, such as GCMAF, and ultraviolet blood irradiation to stimulate and balance the immune system. Western medicine has been treating cancer with surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation for nearly 100 years without much change or real success. Ultimately, even if cancer cells are removed or killed with conventional toxic treatment protocols, the cause of cancer is never addressed, and in most cases, very likely to return, especially if lifestyle habits are unchanged. Another undeniable truth is that chemotherapy and radiation actually increases your risk of getting secondary cancers later in life. And of course, we can't ignore the fact that these toxic therapies destroy our immune system, the very thing we need to protect ourselves from life-threatening diseases. Today on the Natural Health 365 Talk Hour, I'll introduce you to a more sensible, scientifically grounded way to boost immune function, safely detoxify the body, and regain optimal health. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Robert Esslinger to our show. Dr. Esslinger, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
This show is for educational purposes only. Always consult a trusted healthcare provider for medical issues that concern you. And as always, make an informed decision. For more information about Dr. Esslinger, you can visit renointegrative.com. Dr. Esslinger, probably a good place to start for those who may not be very familiar with this is, explain what integrative cancer treatment really is.
Very good question. And this is one of my pet peeves, is if someone Googles integrative cancer treatment online, there's a number of institutions that pay large amounts of money to Google out on top of the list in the search engines, and they say, oh, yes, we do integrative cancer treatment. We do chemo, radiation, and surgery with yoga, meditation, and massage. And I say that's complementary care. That is not integrative cancer care or treatment. Because the therapies that I use are powerful enough to kill cancer by themselves. And these other complementary therapies are helpful and actually helpful in dealing with the bad side effects of the conventional treatment. But the other big misconception I try and clear up whenever I speak or talk to my patients is that the misconception out there, a major one, is that there's no scientific basis for alternative or integrative therapies. And nothing could be further from the truth. The rest of the world, in many cases, is way ahead of the United States in natural therapies, so-called natural therapies, because of the overwhelming predominance of the pharmaceutical industry. But what integrative cancer treatment consists of, I want to also clear up the misconception that in my mind and in my practice, it's not an us and them, us or them proposition. There is a time and a place for conventional medicine, no question about that. And one place that obviously they excel is in emergency medicine and saving lives in an acute situation. And for 13 years before I came here to Reno in 2004, I was a medical director of a hospital, Cascade Medical Center, up in the state of Idaho. So I absolutely want to endorse that there is a time and a place to use conventional medicine, but that is the place or the niche, so to speak, for integrative medicine is combining the best of both worlds. And so it takes a long time to get the training and experience in both conventional medicine and in alternative medicine in order to be able to integrate these different approaches into the best possible therapeutic administration for each individual patient. So integrative cancer treatment consists of the therapies that we'll discuss in the show in a few minutes, combined with the use of the best of conventional care. And what I mean by that is possibly using a prescription to control nausea if that happens. Or there is a time and a place for radiation. If the cancer is in the bone and is causing severe pain, radiation therapy many times can greatly diminish that pain and get the patient off of narcotics. So that's the whole idea, is working with integrating these different therapies in the best possible way for each patient.
Dr. Esslinger, I know this is not going to sound scientific to a lot of our healthcare providers that are listening, but for the people out there who are concerned about choosing which doctor is best for them, I think what you're describing, as far as the way I look at it, and I just want to get your opinion on it, is it's all about a genuine attitude of the healthcare provider. And I want people out there who are really looking into an integrative approach to appreciate what I'm saying. When I say an attitude, it's not like you're prejudging any situation. That's not what I'm hearing from you at all. You're genuinely taking each person's situation and evaluating it on its own merits. If you go to conventionally trained physicians or websites out there that want to look all pretty and talk is really cheap, making a website beautiful, you know, putting in a beautiful waiting room and a lovely building with millions of dollars, you know, they can do that. But if fundamentally every time a person walks through the door and they have, you know, a serious ailment like cancer, and the first thing that they're presented is, you know, surgery possibly, but chemotherapy and radiation, and then, oh yeah, some of these other things like you were saying before. Yeah, we have like a yoga class once a week you can come to. I mean, that to me is a red flag that their attitude is not really integrative, but like you say, it's complimentary and to make it look good, you know?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, indeed.
So, Dr. Esslinger, why don't we get into a little bit more now about how you relate to people about diet? And I say it this way because I know the word diet can be said so quickly, but there is just so much going on there. It just for cancer patients alone, you know, you should be vegan, you should do the Gerson therapy, or no, you can't always do that for certain cancers. And, you know, Dr. Gonzalez, who is a dear friend of mine, when he was practicing and treating here in New York, treating cancer patients, you know, he gave juices to a lot of people and vegetarian foods, but not all cancers. He said some of them, you know, could have meat 2-3 times a day. He had like 10 diets that he prescribed, and then there were variations in between. So talk to us about what your attitude is about diet and what your experience has been.
Well, the diet that I recommend, and I recommend this to all of my cancer patients, and I'll explain why, but I recommend what's called a ketogenic diet, and I'll explain what that is. And as far as I'm concerned, if anyone wants to look into it and do the research, the ketogenic diet is the only way to go because of these fundamental principles of cancer. And they are, in 1931, Dr. Otto Warburg, MD, PhD, German doctor, got a Nobel Prize in medicine for proving that cancer cells of all types, doesn't matter where they come from, where they go to, they use a method, an abnormal method of burning sugar called anaerobic metabolism. And what that means is they burn sugar without using oxygen, which is what our normal cells do, and that's why we breathe. But the fundamental biochemical principle is that anaerobic metabolism is 18 times less efficient at producing a given amount of energy out of a given amount of sugar. And so what that means in practical terms is cancer cells require 18 times more sugar on a moment-by-moment basis than our normal cells do. So this is the basis of the what many people come to me have heard cancer loves sugar. Well, I tell them, cancer doesn't love sugar. Cancer requires 18 times more sugar than normal cells on a moment-by-moment basis. Now, and it will suck up most of the sugar out of your system if it can, given an opportunity. But I tell them, at the same time, it's impossible to cure your cancer by not eating sugar, because our brains require sugar on the same level of intensity that they require oxygen. And so the whole concept of the ketogenic diet is to maintain the blood pressure, the blood sugar, I mean, in a relatively low normal range, but with developing ketones. And ketones, the beauty of the ketones is if the blood sugar is running low, our brain can switch over and burn ketones for energy and continue to function. Cancer cells cannot do that. They have to have simple sugars. So any concentrated sources of sugar, any diet that feeds carbohydrates or high sugar fruits is like pouring gasoline on a fire. And what a ketogenic diet consists of is higher proteins, including animal protein, higher healthy fats, and very low carbohydrates, because all carbohydrates get turned into sugar by our digestive system. And so the ketogenic diet is the only one that addresses this issue globally. And diets with potatoes and quarts of carrot juice and high doses of other fruits or starchy vegetables is like feeding the cancer at the same time you're trying to defeat it. So that is the recommendation I make to patients. Ketogenic diet is not hard to figure out. It is also used, a ketogenic diet is used to treat seizures in children, and that approach is very technical and very difficult to apply in detail. But treating cancer is not difficult, and I provide an outline to my patients as well as low-carb cookbooks. The healthy fats that I mentioned, the main ones are hemp oil, not marijuana oil, hemp oil, organic hemp oil from Manitoba, and coconut oil. Coconut oil is extremely beneficial because it tends to push the body into developing ketones if it's used in a low sugar environment. So those are the general dietary recommendations I make to my patients.
So, Dr. Esslinger, I know a lot of people out there right now, you know, I know the people listening to the show are familiar with me having Charlotte Gerson on from years ago and all of these other people who talked about raw and vegan type diets and macrobiotic diets, too, which I'm sure you're familiar. You've heard this over the years. And a lot of them have, you know, granted, they got away from conventional dairy. They got away from non-grass-fed beef. You know, we're talking about the most toxic food in the world. And then All of a sudden, they go to an organic macrobiotic diet. They do fresh juicing and all of this and colonics. And they do all kinds of other therapies. But fundamentally, when it came to food, you know, they really weren't doing this. And they got over their cancer. So how do we reconcile that? What do you say to those people out there who are wondering now, you know, how could you say this?
Well, I say this because, number one, I regularly see vegetarians who come in here diagnosed with cancer. Vegetarians do get cancer, and I tell them that they are my most difficult patients to treat. And the reason is because I always have trouble keeping their protein levels up and keeping their hemoglobin levels up in normal ranges. And Dr. Doug Brody is the doctor I came here to work with and ultimately took over his practice when he died. He treated cancer with alternative medicine for 30 years. And he was 80 years old when he died, and he saw patients on the day he died. And he used to tell me, all of the components that your immune system uses to fight cancer are made up of proteins. And if you don't have enough of a balanced protein intake, then you cannot make all the tools that your immune system requires to fight cancer. And saying all this, it is possible to be healthy as a vegetarian. I don't deny that, But it's not easy. It's complicated. It's not as simple as most people apply it. And the other thing that I have said that is a very clear message is if you have ever heard of or are familiar with the use of shark cartilage in treating cancer. And have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, actually, I had many years ago that was going on. In fact, it really was quite popular, no?
Yes, it was quite popular, and you can still get shark cartilage in capsule form. And the reason that's touted for that being such an anti-cancer approach is that sharks don't get cancer. And as a matter of fact, I have a degree in biology before I went to medical school. As a matter of fact, sharks never get sick, ever. And so that's something to consider. And you tell me a more quintessential carnivore on the planet. Sharks do not eat vegetables. Sharks eat meat, and they never get cancer, and they never get sick. So how do you explain that? The thing to realize is that the way that I put it is, I was married to a vegetarian for 8 years back in the 1980s. And in my experience, most vegetarians are vegetarian for philosophical reasons. And the way that I put it is your physiology doesn't give a hoot about your philosophy. And your physiology is basically identical to what it was a few thousand years ago. And a few thousand years ago, every human on the planet was a hunter-gatherer. There was no such thing as a vegetarian, because if you were a vegetarian then, you were dead. Because there was no agriculture. And then when humans developed agriculture, the first thing they grew was cereal grains. They didn't grow beans and squash. They grew cereal grains. And arguably, in the anthropological, archaeological record, you can talk to the people who do this kind of research. If they uncover a graveyard or a single grave with a human skeleton in it, they can examine that skeleton and tell whether it was pre-agriculture or post-agriculture. And the reason is that our teeth got softer, our bones got softer, we developed more diseases, and we started living shorter lives. And so vegetarianism is not a natural process for human beings. Dr. Brody used to say, if you look at the teeth of any animal on the planet, it'll tell you what they're supposed to eat. Cows don't have canine teeth. Humans do. Canine teeth are teeth designed to cut meat. And humans have the teeth of what's called an omnivore, which means eating a little bit of everything.
You just read my mind, Dr. Esslinger. I was going to say, from a biological perspective, if you will, the idea is it's a balance, right? Obviously, everybody's health history is different. Obviously, it might be extremely beneficial for someone to be a fruitarian if all they had was toxic meat for like their whole life, and then all of a sudden, for 12 months, they're eating fruit only, and they go, "Oh my God, I feel fantastic! I have all this energy." But is it right to eat fruit your whole life? No, of course not. Your physiology, your metabolism, your chemistry, it changes. But my point is that when we look at our digestive system and we look at the structure of our mouth and our teeth and how many grinders we have for vegetables, fruit, this kind of thing versus, you know, the ones that can cut into meat, I guess, you know, on an overall look at this, it is a balancing game that you are describing. It's not like you're against fruits and vegetables. I just want to be clear.
No, but I tell my cancer patients, you know, you hear a lot about eat lots of fruits and vegetables. And I say, eat lots of vegetables, non-starchy vegetables, and a little bit of fruit, because there is sugar in fruit, but there's lots of beneficial vitamins and antioxidants in them as well. The fruits that I recommend to my patients when they actually have a diagnosis of cancer is blueberries, raspberries, and strawberries, because of the large ratio of antioxidants in those fruits as compared to, say, peaches. Yes, there are antioxidants in peaches, but they're much higher sugar levels. And so the berries are the way to go if you're addressing cancer.
And Dr. Esslinger, just one more point about food that I never get tired bringing up, and with you as a physician, I love mentioning it as well. I mean, I'm certainly not always doing this myself, but boy, do I notice a difference. And God forbid anybody's diagnosed with cancer. I personally would be recommending this, and I talk about it as often as I can on the show. One of the things I learned from the macrobiotic community, you know, almost 30 years ago now, is this value of chewing your food, just breaking up all of the food. When someone has cancer, their energy levels are so low, their digestive system is clearly not going to be functioning at optimal levels. What a great benefit, no matter what it is that you're eating, that you break it up so much in the mouth. And also the other concept that I bring up a lot, Dr. Essinger, is the idea of not having a toxic mouth to begin with, in terms of oral infections, you know, poor dental care. These are all things I'm sure you would agree have to be rectified, no?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It needs to be addressed. And one of the biggest issues, which is unbelievably still controversial with the American Dental Association, is the use of mercury. And there are lots of dentists getting away from it because of patient demand, but I tell my patients, contact the Environmental Protection Agency and ask them what is a safe, acceptable level of mercury in the body. And they will tell you zero, zero tolerance. One of the most toxic compounds on the planet is mercury. But according to the American Dental Association, it's okay to put in your mouth. That is ludicrous. And it's the only reason that it's used is because of the handling characteristics when it's combined with silver and a couple other trace minerals or metals to make a compound that can fill in cavities and holes in the teeth. It has nothing to do with it being healthy, which, of course, it is not. And the other thing that can be extremely toxic in the mouth is root canals, depending on how meticulous the dentist was that put the root canal in. I just recently had a patient who finally had so much pain in her tooth, they had the oral surgeon had to open up the root canal, go back in, and they found a broken off tip of a file in the root canal. Now, I know that would show up on an x-ray. I don't know how any dentist could know that didn't happen and wasn't there. But yet it was considered innocuous and just go ahead and leave it. And that is just ludicrous. So there are lots of oral issues. And I keep a chart up on my wall of, you can go online and Google it. It's all the teeth are very similar to, they are connected to different organs in the body. Very similar way to acupuncture meridians. And I have seen many cases of cancer where someone has an infected root canal, they're not responding to treatment, and we finally have a talk with them, and I mean, we do in the beginning, but they don't want to go pursue it, but we have them go and have that root that tooth removed or dealt with, and they start responding to treatment and the cancer goes away. So I know there's a connection between the condition of the teeth and what compounds and or infections dramatically affect our health.
Just one note for those listening. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. Thousands of people have already purchased the Holistic Oral Health Summit, which was a big event that I put together to look deep into this topic. Whether you get it or not is not my point. The HolisticOralHealthSummit.com is where you can go. But even if you don't have the entire event and all of the speakers, all of this information on audio video, please, I encourage you, if you have mercury-based silver fillings, you have root canal treated teeth, any of these things, and you're concerned that this is stopping you from fully recovering, and you've even worked with a healthcare provider like Dr. Esslinger, and they're saying, look, you know, you ought to maybe clean up your mouth, please be careful. No matter what, make sure that you're working with someone that's well-trained in biological dentistry. Another place you can look at is the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, a great organization where people are trained in this. But you just need to have the information. Don't go willy-nilly into just taking out mercury out of your mouth, because you could cause a lot more serious problems. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Esslinger?
Absolutely. It has to be done properly, or you end up dispersing the mercury throughout the body. I tell patients it's interesting that when you do go to a dentist that has is a biological dentist and is removing your mercury fillings, number one, you have to notice that they're dressed in a hazmat suit. And number two, if they take out that mercury and dump it down the drain, they could go to jail for dumping toxic materials into the water supply. So think about that. And the other thing I was going to mention is there are some cancer clinics in Europe that will not even see you as a patient unless you go have all your mercury fillings removed from your teeth.
That's definitely, no pun intended, food for thought, Dr. Esslinger. And so my final question before we take a break, and then we're going to dive really deeply, as we promised everybody, into your therapies. What kind of tools are you pulling out of the toolbox to help cancer patients? We're going to cover all of that in the second half of the program. But just a quick question for you. Why are you practicing in Nevada, of all states in the United States? Talk to us about that.
Well, what's interesting about Nevada, and the doctor I mentioned earlier, Doug Brody, had a lot to do with this. He and a group of physicians, back in the late 70s, he was in California, and he started using a compound that's called Laetril, which is made from apricot pits, which we still use in our clinic. But he ran afoul of the California Medical Board because it didn't matter that he was curing people of cancer. He wasn't following the rules. And this compound, Laetril, is completely non-toxic, but it, and I'm not saying it cures 100% of cancer, but in any case, he came to Nevada, and he and this group of doctors got legislation passed through the state legislature that allowed the creation of a completely separate medical board called the Homeopathic Medical Board. And it is a process to enable MDs and DOs to get licensed in alternative medicine after taking a prescribed curriculum and getting a certain number of credits and then passing what's called the homeopathic boards, which is far more than homeopathy. It's all of alternative medicine. And when you do that, you get what's called an HMD, homeopathic medical doctor. And I am a member of the homeopathic medical board for the state of Nevada. And what this allows you then, you come under the jurisdiction of the homeopathic medical board, and it allows you protection from the medical board or the osteopathic board to prevent them from coming in and stopping me from practicing these natural therapies. And there are only three states in the United States that provide this licensing, and they are Nevada, Arizona, and Connecticut. In all the other states, people that do many of the therapies that we do here in Reno, doctors, I mean, that practice these therapies, are subject to persecution by the medical board if they're not following the pharmaceutical guidelines. And so that's why we're in Nevada. That's why I came to Nevada to work with Dr. Brody.
As a quick reminder, Natural Health 365 Talk Hour show recordings like the one you're listening to right now, special events and discounts are available exclusively for Inner Circle monthly subscribers. Simply click the banner on this page and subscribe today. Dr. Esslinger, let's get into it. This is what people really are going to be very interested in. Some of the therapies that you're using in your integrative cancer treatments, you know, for all your cancer patients. Talk to us about it, please.
Okay. One of the big tools that we use is a therapy called IPT. It stands for insulin potentiated therapy. And this therapy takes advantage of the cancer cell's greater need for sugar that I mentioned earlier. It was developed in Mexico in the 1920s, and there are probably somewhere between 200 and 300 doctors worldwide practicing this therapy. And when I came here to Reno, Dr. Brody sent me down to Tijuana to train with the grandson, who's an MD, of the doctor who developed this therapy back in the 1920s. And what it consists of is using insulin, which is pharmaceutical-grade insulin, to lower the blood sugar. It's the same insulin that diabetics use to lower very high blood sugars. And what we do is we lower a normal blood sugar down into a range where the cancer cells literally start starving for sugar because of their greater need for it that I described. And when this happens, the cancer cells do what's called open up their cell membranes to try to grab any sugar molecules coming through the blood because they get desperate. And when that happens, we administer a tiny dose of sugar, but it's mixed with a number of compounds that specifically can target the cancer cells more than normal cells. Because as the sugar goes down, our normal cells start to go into a quasi-hibernation because of the lower sugar, where the cancer cells cannot do that process, and that's why they start craving sugar. So the compounds we combine with the sugar are the laetril that I mentioned earlier, made from apricot pits. We can use mistletoe extract that comes from Germany. Mistletoe extract is used intravenously to treat cancer patients in the hospital in Canada and Germany, but not in the good old USA because it's too natural. But it is legal for patients to order this directly from the company that we work with in Germany, and we can administer it. Then we also use standard chemo drugs. We use standard chemo drugs that we order from a pharmaceutical company, but it's only given at 10% of the full dose. So it's 90% than the full dose, and we have 90% less problems with the chemos, the problems being the bad side effects. And the reason this is a more powerful way to treat cancer, even though you'd say, well, how can it be more powerful if you use less, is because it can specifically target the cancer cells in a way that is much more like, say, a laser-guided bomb instead of carpet bombing, which would be the method for full-dose chemo with all its bad effects. And then we have ways to bring that sugar back up into the normal range. And so we do this IPT treatment twice a week during a three-week period that Dr. Brody developed. He called it cancer boot camp. And so for 5 days a week, for three weeks in a row, we administer all these therapies I'll talk about in a very specific timed protocol. And IPT is two times a week for those 3 weeks. Then immediately after the IPT treatment, we do an ultraviolet blood irradiation, or UBI treatment. Now, the interesting thing about this UBI treatment is it was developed in the United States and back in the 1920s, and it was heavily utilized before World War II, because it's deadly to all viruses, most bacteria, and all cancer cells. However, in the 1950s, when there was a big influx of pharmaceuticals into conventional medicine, they started ignoring UBI because no one can patent ultraviolet light. So no one can make billions of dollars from it. But in Europe, they couldn't afford the drugs, and so they carried on the research and the therapy, and it's very big in France, Germany, Austria, and Russia, and interestingly enough, also in Cuba. But this UBI treatment is given twice a week on the same day that we give IPT. Now, there's a website I can give people if they want to learn more about this ultraviolet treatment. It's drsubi.com. Like the abbreviation for doctors, drsubi.com. And if somebody wants to go there, they can read, if they want, over 125 published medical studies on the benefits of UBI. So this is far from an unproven therapy, and it originated in the United States, and the FDA is fully aware of this therapy. And as a matter of fact, we also have a second technique for doing this, which I'm involved in a study that is known to the FDA called an IRB, Institutional Review Board. A company in Southern California developed a machine that has a fiber optic probe that can fit inside an IV catheter and irradiate the blood with ultraviolet light right into the vein. The UBI treatment I mentioned first, we actually take a sample of blood out, mix it with ozone in a bottle of saline solution, sterile saline, and then reinfuse it back into the person, and it passes through a chamber, a 12-inch long quartz glass tube surrounded by ultraviolet light bulbs. And then we have a category of therapies we call immune therapies, and GC-MAF is at the top of the list there. Now, the interesting thing about GC-MAF is the MAF stands for macrophage activating factor. And macrophage cells are a type of white blood cell whose job it is to kill abnormal cells. But the interesting thing that happens is when a cell flips over into this anaerobic metabolism and becomes cancer, it starts secreting an enzyme called NAGLase. And NAGLase, we can actually do a blood test for and measure its level. But the function of this NAGLase enzyme is it turns off these macrophage cells. And so it literally hides the tumor from the immune system. And what the GC-MAF does, and it's a shot of a tiny, tiny shot, twice a week, this GC-MAF protein, macrophage activating factor, goes in and turns these macrophages back on again so they can start finding the abnormal cancer cells. So I call it decloaking the cancer cells. And then we also do a therapy that I developed here in my own office where we concentrate the T cells, which are T lymphocytes that come from the thymus gland just behind the breastbone in everybody. And T cells also are cancer killers or can become cancer killers. And we concentrate the T cells and then incubate them overnight at a temperature of 102 degrees Fahrenheit, which is a fever temperature in a human, obviously. And what conventional research has proven that this process stimulates these T cells to start developing what's called heat shock proteins. And these heat shock proteins enable these T cells to kill cancer cells. And then the next day we inject them intramuscular back into the patient. And all it is their own cells going back into them. So I've never had an adverse reaction with this. And once a week we give this, I call it TCRP, T-cell rich plasma. We give this in conjunction with the GC-MAF therapy. And then lastly, we still use some of the immune boosting formulas that Dr. Brody developed over 30 years of intravenous vitamins and minerals in certain combinations to boost the strength of the immune system. So the way to view this protocol is we have some therapies that will actually directly kill cancer cells. We have other therapies that will strengthen the immune system. And then we have other therapies that do what I call decloak the cancer cells to give those strengthened immune cells a target, a specific target to go after. So that's kind of a quick summary of an overview of this whole protocol that we do.
Dr. Esslinger, you've made it so clear that there are so many options for people to have. You know, when you mention vitamins at the end, boosting immune function, we talk about this all the time, about something just to have flowing through your body. Obviously, the worst case scenario is to be at the 11th hour to make decisions. You've been diagnosed with cancer. You know, it blindsides somebody. There's so much fear. There's so much worry, so much mental, emotional stress. It would be great if we could get this message out about how people should take better care of themselves on a daily basis. Prevention is definitely, you know, worth a whole lot. We all understand that. We've mentioned vitamin C, vitamin D with K2.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess you're in favor of these, no?
We also use high-dose intravenous vitamin C and ozone and hydrogen peroxide in a whole other category of therapies called oxidative therapies. These were developed in Germany, and they are based on the fact of, again, of this anaerobic metabolism of the cancer cells. Oxygen in certain forms is deadly to the cancer cells. And interestingly enough, vitamin C, if you look at it technically, it's an antioxidant. However, above a dose of 10 grams a day or 10,000 milligrams, which can only be given intravenously, it stimulates certain white blood cells to produce hydrogen peroxide internally. So above 10 grams a day, vitamin C becomes an oxidative therapy. And that is one of the mechanisms it has it uses for boosting the immune system.
And when it comes to dealing with things like cancer or serious cases of heart disease, you know, full-blown cases of diabetes, people are really worn out, their energies are low. I say this with a lot of respect, but the people out there who say, oh, you talk about vitamin C, Jonathan, you know, you can get it from fruits and vegetables. You don't need to supplement at all. I mean, I think it's highly unrealistic when we're talking about someone that's so depleted that, you know, extreme measures take, you know, extreme therapies and work to get the job done, to turn the ship around, no?
Here is something that's not very widely known, but it's in the record book. In 1949, there was an MD from South Carolina who did his own study, and back then, if you remember, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 64, so I remember the polio epidemic. And they still say in the medical textbooks, there's no cure for polio. And this doctor's name is...
Dr. Frederick Klenner is who you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. And he presented a paper to the South Carolina AMA meeting in 1949, and he presented the results of a study he performed on his own patients. And out of 60 children who had been diagnosed by appropriate testing as being infected with polio, and one of them, even a young girl, had even developed paralysis in her legs already, and he treated them with high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And out of 60 patients, he cured 60 of them. And that was not deemed important enough to do further investigation into vitamin C. So the fact is, the absolute known fact for people who know anything about the research, you cannot get enough vitamin C out of eating fruits and vegetables to be able to have it be a therapeutic approach. Of course, it's important, yes, to get natural sources. But it's not enough to be an actual therapy the way we're talking about it here. And its benefit has been proven in the last 100 years. There's something like 50,000 papers have been produced worldwide on the benefit of vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C, and it's still being ignored.
Yeah, Dr. Esslinger, you and I have spoken for the first time here on this program. We are so much on the same page. I appreciate all of the information you're giving out. It's a breath of fresh air, for sure. You know, we're looking at things that, again, not to be misunderstood what our joint message is here. Yes, fixing oral health problems, getting mercury out, you know, pulling root canal treated teeth, you know, and cleaning out infections. I know for a fact, I'm sure you could tell many stories as well of just fixing that alone, rectifying the problem, stopping the stress assault of toxins, actually reversing disease conditions around where symptoms just fade away. But are we saying that fixing the mouth for every single cancer patient, that's it? For other people, it's about grace. It's about loving more. It's about forgiving more. I mean, it could be quite simply, you know, a near-death experience where they have that feeling of, I've got to forgive more. And they have this revelation. And there are stories out there of people, their tumors have gone away. I mean, it's not to say that in every case, this is what happens. But the cases are out there to give people the tools of changing themselves emotionally, mentally, physically in the mouth, how to boost up their body's strength mechanisms, all of these things by taking in vitamin C, all the therapies that you mentioned. This is what this is all about. This is the kind of information that needs to get out there more. And I hope as people are listening to this, you know, not only for themselves, please share this information with other people. Dr. Esslinger, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I would say exactly. I totally, totally agree with what you just said. And in fact, my own personal and professional belief is, as many people as there are on the planet, yes, there are general categories of disease, but the individual details that come to bear in every single case or every single patient is totally unique to that patient. And that's why a standard cookie-cutting approach of, oh, you have joint pain, here you take an anti-inflammatory. That's why it doesn't work long-term. Because, yes, it'll help some people, but it's not going to help all of them. And so that's why it takes more than what conventional medicine is teaching to just have a book of drugs and a diagnosis, which is just a term that somebody puts with a package of symptoms, and say, for this diagnosis, you give this drug. That is not the best approach for each patient. And unfortunately, what we're talking about here, this kind of approach, is far more complicated, and it can't be squeezed into a 5 or 10 minute doctor visit. And so for acute care, yes, maybe. But long-term, especially chronic degenerative diseases, it takes far more time and information to put it all together in a package for that patient that can really help them. I would encourage your listeners to do some research. Go out there and look. Fortunately and unfortunately, the internet is a blessing and a curse at the same time. But you can get in touch with me with your questions. There are many sources out there that have very good information. You don't just have to accept what conventional medicine is telling you and just go, I call it, into the chemo kitchen and take drugs.
In all fairness to Dr. Esslinger, please understand this is a practicing physician with an entire patient base. Before I even ask the question, that's why I wanted to throw this out. I've had many guests on my program before where I ask this simple question at the end. If people wanted to get in touch with you, Dr. Esslinger, where can they, you know, what should they do? But for those people listening who might be interested in meeting up with Dr. Esslinger here in the United States, please be patient if you're going to send an email or contact him through his website. You know, they do have a lot of patients to take care of. But what would you suggest? What should people do, Dr. Esslinger?
Well, the two best ways is either call the office at 775-829-1009, 775-829-1009. Or if you want to read about us without getting in touch with us first and then decide, you can go to our website at www.renointegrative.com, renointegrative.com. Those are the best ways.
Dr. Esslinger, I want to thank you so much for your time, and I want to thank our listeners for joining us today. Again, for more information about Dr. Esslinger, you can visit renointegrative.com. Next week, we'll have a great show for you. Be sure to check this page for updates coming soon. If you know someone who'd like to hear these free weekly shows, tell them to go to naturalhealth365.com and register now. Natural Health 365 Talk Hour show recordings, special events, and discounts are available exclusively for Inner Circle monthly subscribers. Simply click the banner on this page and subscribe today. I'm your host, Jonathan Landsman. I hope you enjoyed this program. Thank you so much for your support. Talk to you soon. Take care.